This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
It's 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob.
Well, I must be Mercedes then. And we're on Community Radio 3CR with Friday Rave.
Welcome back to Community Radio 3CR. I'm here with Jake and you're on a Friday Rave. Hey, Jake.
Yes, and Mercedes.
Hello. You might be tuned into 855 kilohertz on your AM dial via 3CR Digital, or you might be listening back via your favourite podcast client, or just for the next week anyway, on the 3CR website, or through the Preston ceiling fan.
Through the Preston ceiling fan. I'll tell you what, I'm sitting up here on the banks of the Gwydir River, up near Moree in western New South Wales, and there are no Preston ceiling fans up here, mate. There's no Moree ceiling fan. It's wonderful.
That sounds lovely.
It's wonderful. Yeah, but look, one bad thing about being in Moree is that there's no rally in support of Palestine this weekend up here, like there is in Melbourne.
And everywhere and else across the continent.
It's going to be a huge one. It's going to be an absolute doozy, let's hope. So without anything else, if you do nothing else to manifest your, what I'd say, you're listening to 3CR, this radio show, so an obvious interest in justice and human rights, if you do nothing else to manifest that interest, get to your local rally this Sunday, whether you're in Melbourne or if you're listening somewhere else in Australia. They're in every major city other than Moree, so get down there. But it's been a real turn of events. I mean, we've been speaking on this show. I mean, I have, since you've started co-hosting it with me, and even our conversations before, about how Israel is becoming a pariah state. And I think Netanyahu's comments over the last few days about Anthony Albanese, particularly his comments, like he's obviously deranged.
Got warrants out for, he's a war criminal.
He's a war criminal. He's not even a coherent war criminal. He's making Donald Trump sound sane. I mean, he's absolutely, you know, saying that because of people like Anthony Albanese is what led to World War II.
Yeah.
Appreciate Hitler. I mean, it's absolute bonkers. But having said that, he's saying that because he's not used to having, someone like Anthony Albanese actually coming out and, I won't go as far as saying condemning, expressing reservations about some of the shit that Israel's been doing. And this is an interesting thing. And do you mind if I just talk on this for a second? A lot of people are congratulating Anthony Albanese for finally coming round. Now, that is, and Penny Wong and the rest of them, that is absolute bullshit. Anthony Albanese has known the facts on the ground, has known that Israel's been committing genocide from day one, actually before October the 7th, 2 years ago, he's been aware of it. And he was co-chair, he was one of the founders of the Parliamentary Friends of Palestine back when he was an opposition backbencher. He knows what's going on. But what's happening, and what I've been saying from the start, is that Albo doesn't need to be told what's going on in Gaza because he knows it. But what he's been doing is putting his own political survival before what is right. That is all there is to it. Now, and I spoke at a rally at the opening of Parliament in, when was it? Was it August? Yeah, in Canberra. Was that August still or whenever it was?
Might have been July. It was exactly a month ago.
Exactly a month ago.
Today.
Saying that after the election, with the Labor Party winning such a huge majority, Albanese has now the opportunity over the next few months to say what he really thinks about Israel and the situation in Gaza and the occupied territories on the West Bank. Because there's no, before that, we all know that if he said anything, he would have, he had, you know, the ghost of Gough Whitlam looking over his left shoulder. Let's just put it like that.
So now Labor has solidified another term. That's
right.
Politically safe for them to do so.
Yeah. So what surprised me is not that Albanese has seemingly turned tables. When I say Albanese, I mean Wong and what's his other bloke, Burke, and all the rest of them. Not that they've actually changed their position, is that they've only changed their position so fucking minusculely. They know what's going on. They now feel emboldened that they can say something, but all they're saying is bugger all, really. Albanese saying, oh, I don't take it personally. I respect all world leaders. They're doing nothing.
It's words, not action.
Yeah. Yeah. It's absolute craziness.
And I think that point about, sorry, but I think that point about that, you know, they're prioritizing their political position and political security, for want of a better word, over the lives of 2 million Palestinians.
Exactly. And that's what all the Labor Party officials and many Labor Party members, I got to say. I mean, before you know it, you're going to see state Labor Party people get on board. Then you're going to see other Labor Party figures, I don't know, speaking at rallies and all the rest of it. And wouldn't surprise you, would it, if we have Labor Party proxies and Labor Party figures speaking at rallies in the coming terms? Now, what are they going to say?
What they're not going to say is that, oh, it was actually more politically expedient and politically important for us to not speak out against a genocide and to not act on a genocide. That's all that they can say.
What they're going to say, and the other thing is, this reminds me of people who change sides in a change their position in the last quarter of a football match once the outcome is already determined, you know. Israel is fucked, all right? Everybody knows what is happening is wrong. Now, these people are going to say something now, and they're going to turn around in 2 years' time and say, we were always on Palestine's side. Just like after doing nothing for years, they've turned around and said, we were always on Julian Assange's side. We were always on Nelson Mandela's side. We were always on East Timor's side. We were always. They never were. Everything they're saying because we've dragged them crying and screaming across the floor of public opinion to force them to the situation where they've got to say the absolute minimum, like they're doing, and then when they do, they're going to claim responsibility for it.
But it's so transparent. They're not going to get away with it.
They are getting away with it. I mean, next thing, you know, the ACTU, Trades Hall, are all going to come out and say things in support of Palestine after being quiet for 2 years. You know, the same bullshit as the ALP. You know, anyway, you look at Trades Hall, for example, they're going to come out in support of Palestine now. Remember, they couldn't even come out in support of the ACTU, of the CFMEU. They couldn't even support the CFMEU when it was being attacked by the Labor government. So how were they possibly going to support Palestine? Looking after their own interests. But anyway, be that as it may, I don't want to spend a whole show ragging at the Labor Party.
But we
what
could.
Else have we got? I could. You know, the famous street march, gents. 1, 2, 3. Fuck the ALP. 4, 5, 6. Fuck the ALP. but anyway, the ALP had done a deal with Austel that you brought to my attention a couple of weeks ago. They're now the preferred supplier for Australian warships, and they're going to be building all kinds of shit. And Austell, it's all about, of course, it's not about building warships. It's about maintaining engineering capability in Australia. But Austell also have, I'm not going to talk much about them, but they've got shipyards in Vietnam, Philippines, and the US. And that's could prove handy because as we speak, the Royal Australian Navy is taking part in its largest overseas exercise this year, Alon 25 in the Philippines. Alon is Tagalog for wave, apparently. We don't know how many Australian troops are involved. We know it's not just the Navy. The Air Force will be there. The Army will have someone there. Because that's all operational secret, of course. If we knew how many Aussies were there, we could bring down the nation. But anyway, we know that HMAS Brisbane has taken part, and that's an air warfare destroyer that this year has been travelling with the UK Carrier Strike Group that includes the aircraft carrier, the Prince of Wales, a couple of destroyers and a nuclear warship, the Astute, which was been hanging around since we've been in AUKUS. That's
Yeah,
the
that
one
got
that
there in
Australia.
about 2021, didn't it?
This is the one that Australians have been training on and being interoperable or interchangeable with. And the Brisbane will leave the carrier group, and I'm not sure whether it'll be replaced by the HMAS Sydney or another one, because the HMAS Sydney was with the carrier group earlier on, but who knows? They're provoking China. Now, the Brisbane, just by the way, was the ship that fired the first Tomahawk missile last December, Australia's first Tomahawk missile, making us the third country, along with the AUKUS amigos, to have the capability. And, as His Gormlessness, Dickie Miles, put it, we're not just interoperable now, we're interchangeable. All
Yeah,
right,
and
that's a huge.
that's a huge change. We did talk about it, that very quick shift from interoperable to interchangeable, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later on as well, but that's a big
Right,
one to keep an eye out for, folks.
but back to Alon 25. Well, we don't know the numbers. We do know 3,600 troops in the Philippines, Canada, and Australia, along with the U.S. Marine Corps Maritime Rotation Force based in Darwin. This is important. What we're seeing here is, to my knowledge, at least, the first time the U.S. military are using their Marine Rotational Force in Darwin as a launching base for an overseas mission. Now, I know that we refueled the bombers from Katherine on their way, but that's different. That's just refueling some planes, not to play down the significance of it. But what we have here are the Marines based in Darwin getting on their ships and going to an exercise, training like they will do to attack China. And, because that's what Alon 25 is about, when you consider that they're going off to that its area is west of Luzon and north of Palawan officially, and that tells you it's about the Spratly Islands and Scarborough Shoal. And we don't hear much about what's going down there at the moment. Let's face it, we're concentrating on Palestine and Ukraine. But just last week, hardly made the news, there was a collision of two PLA Navy, our Chinese Navy warships, right near Scarborough Shoal, as they tried to stop a Filipino Coast Guard ship from getting to the disputed atoll. Now, the next day, the very next day, the US Navy sent a destroyer, the USS Higgins, on a freedom of navigation exercise right past, which the PLA claims that they turned the Higgins away too. Now, I don't want to get into the legalities of China and the Philippines competing maritime claims, but it takes a while for the Ashley Burt destroyer, it was the Higgins, but it's an Ashley Burt class, not just to be deployed, but to move with a top speed of 30 knots. It's more than a
It's
few days out.
massive.
But it's more than a few days out from its home port in Tokyo Bay. It's the Higgins is based in Tokyo Bay. It's not like the Philippines just rung up the US and said, look, we'll just send round, something's happened here, and the US said, we'll just send round a couple of mates. The USS Higgins would have been lurking close by, and the Philippine Navy knew that if they sent a Coast Guard ship to Scarborough, they'd be approached by the PLA Navy, and all this happened 3 days before a major naval exercise, which is going to be centred on Scarborough Shoal. So, as I say, regardless of what you think of the competing claims, this was a whole thing was a setup, and the exercise taking place now is nothing short of reckless. It's the kind of bullshit that could get the Philippines into a small-scale proxy shootout with China that could just go tit for tat forever, or could escalate into a Ukraine-style conflict, you know, or for a godforsaken atoll. Sorry, there's no people on Scarborough. It's named for a shipwreck that happened there a couple of years ago. It's 150 square kilometres, and most of that's a lagoon. So this is what's happening. While we're looking at Palestine, while we're looking at Ukraine, we're going full blast on becoming interoperable with the POMs and the Yanks to attack China. And not just there. We've got Operation, what's it called? Exercise Archer with the US, undertaking live firing at the Beecroft Weapon Range, which is the north head of Jervis Bay, just south of Nowra on the New South Wales coast. These things are about not just the firing, but every aspect of it, all the logistics, all the maintenance, all the bomb loading, excuse me, all the target arrays. And it wasn't just the militaries, but included this time the private firm Kinetic, Q-I-N-T-I-C. TIQ, that recently bought out and greatly expanded a mob called Air Services Australia, and they operate all kinds of aeronautical services for the Navy, from its base, which is just adjacent to the RAN Albatross base, just south of Nowra. But anyway, so all this is happening, and what's the Australian government's response? What are we doing? We're just building up the military. Now, Conroy, you've been talking to me about what Pat Conroy's been on about in recent, just today. I don't know if it was today or yesterday.
No, it was just on the 19th, so just a few days ago. And, you know, saying we're building up Australia's defence capability. Pat Conroy did an address to the Queensland Media Club about Australia's defence capability. And I tell you what, I mean, he's pretty much done all of our work for us in terms of just outlining straight up everything that the Albanese government is up to in terms of defence. I mean, not everything, but a lot of it. And a big part of that, you know, when we're talking about building up defence, is one of the things that, I mean, of all of the things, there was lots of things that stood out. But I'm going to have to start it again.
The drones?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. All right. I'll cut that bit up.
Talking to me about.
Yeah. But I mean, one of the things that Conroy said in that address is that, this is a direct quote, "and I acknowledge there is more work to be done to make defence the best customer it can be for industry." And I feel like that's a pretty important point of thinking about who Conroy was talking to. It was probably some large major defence primes, but also a lot of the people in that room were industry heads, small to medium enterprise owners, defence industry, supply chain suppliers. But how to make defence the best customer it can be for industry. Now, one of the things that Conroy was talking about during that address was the Land Project 156, which is improving UAS, or uncrewed aerial vehicles, UAVs rather, and drones. And over the next 10 years, which is something like $10 to $16 billion, to increase counter drone and drone capability in Australia. And so there's 11...
Including submarine drone systems, he says.
Including submarine drone systems, which he mentions that there was just a launch in the maritime big play with the UK, with the Royal Navy in the UK, for the first successful launch of an interchangeable uncrewed watercraft. Sorry for want of a better word. You'll have to excuse me, folks. I'm a little bit all over the place today, but and so it's that term interchangeable again. So Conroy's talking here about not only launching that, but also gathering and sharing the intelligence and the learning and interchanging that to launch the same system in the same way anywhere that the UK needs it as well. So that was one part of it, but also another big part of it, and this is where this kind of how defence could work for industry. As part of Land Project 156, the government are forking out heaps and heaps of cash to develop drone systems, upgrades, maintenance, sustainment, AI capability. And so this is not just for the development of new drones. Companies like Drone Shield are a massive one. So Drone Shield, there's photos of Pat Conroy, there's photos of Albanese, there's photos of Richard Miles, there's photos of Israeli soldiers, all holding Drone Shield guns. Like the Mark II that was on the export list that was released by Declassified Australia earlier in April, with some of Drone Shield's weapons. And so this technology is being developed, one, to upgrade and to be integrated into existing drone systems, such as the Skylark, which the Australian government has bought off Elbit Systems and have been tested by Nova Systems, but also to develop new drones. And Drone Shield have also just announced that they have a new, it's commercial in confidence, I guess, partnership with a Ukrainian partner, which
could, I wonder who that could be.
It could be Brave One, or Brave One potentially could be marketing Drone Shield products, but also that they've just increased their exports, and it's around $80 million to export drones to Spain, Denmark, and Poland.
Right.
So when Pat Conroy is talking about how defence can best work with industry, we're seeing tax dollars, defence budget being chucked into these companies who are then developing these systems, not just for the ADF, but for export. And they do. And Pat Conroy does talk about exports massively and how important the licence-free environment that came in September last year has been. And there's now about 450 Australian entities. And he says entities, he doesn't say Australian companies. He says entities, which we would probably refer to as front groups, that are involved.
And universities and research facilities and those kind of things.
And they talk about the license-free environment, cutting down that export process from what would be months or weeks to less than a few days. Like that's how easy it is to export weapons under the and weapons parts. But back to the drones, and one of the things.
Before we go back to the drones, I just want to interject one thing, and you raised attention to it, and that is the quote: "The best way of delivering." Oh, hang on, no, that's not it. The best way to ensure a defence future made in Australia, and that's it. That's what I'm looking for. To make defence the best customer it can be for industry. Now, I thought the role of industry was to provide for defence as best as it could. And defence was there to protect our nation, is what I thought. But what he's talking about here is he's putting, you know, Descartes before Day Horse, if you like. and saying that the role of defence, what they're trying to do is make it the best it can be for industry. And this is what we've been saying for a long time, that part of our military build-up is to support industry.
But that's the whole point. I mean, think about who Conroy's talking to in this room. It's defence industry buffs. Examples he gives is that this technology will be rolled, the ADF's technology will be rolled out for the Brisbane Olympics. But that's just the one example that they give. And so what we're seeing is, and this is coming alongside Drone Shield, just in the last couple of weeks, releasing and putting on the market for commercial customers and civil society a technology called Sentry Civ. That's Sentry with an S and Civ with a C. And that's for commercial and civil society, not for military capability. But, of course, it is military technology, and they're wanting to roll that out for state and territory police, prisons, any company that needs advanced security measures. We can see alongside the $170 million that the government gave as part of that like last tranche of grant funding that gave for security that we spoke about last week. This is the kind of technology that weapons manufacturers, large companies, corporations, prisons, police are going to be using and rolling out across the continent because it's now available on the market and anyone can buy it essentially.
And it will start, and like anything in this in these situations, you know, like, I mean, just in my own, I won't even say my own lifetime, my own professional career, looking after buildings and security and different things in different places. I remember when cameras first started becoming available. You said, oh, yeah, well, that's only, you know, not for us. But then before you knew it, it was, you had to have cameras. A, because of insurance, and to not have cameras would have been seen as socially irresponsible and not being responsible to your workforce. Like I remember just in the last job at Trades Hall, being told that we had to have cameras to look after the safety of women leaving the building at night, just as an example. To not have cameras would have been irresponsible as an employer. Now, cameras is one thing, and drones are a bit bigger. But we're going to have a situation within a dozen years anyway, not too quick, where it would be irresponsible for them not to have anti-drone equipment at most major infrastructures. Like they're talking now about prisons and what do they call themselves, critical infrastructure. So we're talking airports, we're talking ports. But how soon before the MCG, most hospitals, universities, private schools are all going to have anti-drone. I mean, we're becoming militarized to the point of insanity.
And I think like that term militarized, and we spoke about it before I joined a co-host about, you know, of civil society and policing. We would say, you know, we had that discussion about the militarization of the police, but it's always been the same sides of the coin. Like there's never really been any separation of it. No. But it's going to be rolled out here. But I think that the AI integration of this is like, it's not these surveillance systems. Where are they built from? You've got the largest surveillance network that is being rolled out by Israel against Palestinians right now. These companies, Skylark drones, are made by Elbit Systems. That surveillance network, where is this? So much of this technology is being developed against Palestinians and then utilized here, elsewhere, and not just Palestinians, but this, every time the AI models are based on training. So every time this is rolled out, these models, these AI structures learn and develop and grow. That's the very premise of what it is. So the more they're rolled out, the exponential data collection and analysis increases and increases exponentially. Just quickly, because we're about to run out of time, but the Ghost Bat, the MQ-28A Ghost Bat, which is a sovereign developed uncrewed aerial vehicle, developed with, I think it's BAE Systems alongside like FARA, Coastal Aviation, Love It Technologies down here in Greensboro. I have a big part to do with the Ghost Bat. That's just had a lot of flying time. There's 200 companies that are involved in that program. And so there's been 20,000 hours of testing. They've been flown successfully with a wedge tail, and they'll be doing air-to-air weapon firings later this year as a test for the Ghost Bat. So that's moving quickly. And so, yeah, we're about out of time, but I do reckon, listeners, if you just jump on and have a look at Pat Conroy's address from the 19th of this month, you can find that in the speeches tab on the Defence Minister website, and just have a little bit of a read through and have a look. But that's about all we've got time for this week.
I'll just do a DuckDuckGo search on Conroy, address to Queensland media.
Exactly. That's much easier. Much easier. All right, folks. We'll see you on Sunday.
I'll look forward to seeing pictures of you on Sunday.
Absolutely. Stay tuned for Radio MMT. I think we'll catch you next week.
Or next week.